Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning, November 20th. We had an amazing, amazing weekend in the restaurant business over here. The weather has turned in Tucson. Lots of great sporting events going on. We had U of A basketball play the University of Wisconsin. Our Wildcats even won a football game against the University of Houston. But man, did we have an event this weekend that crossed over just about all ages, all demographic groups. And that event happened to be the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight. This one transcended just about every gender, every age, and had nearly every customer in all of my restaurants asking for it, reminding me of a time in the 1980s when boxing used to be the biggest thing on earth. From 1986 to 1990, Mike Tyson absolutely dominated the world as just about the darkest, toughest force that could have existed on planet Earth. He won 12 of his first 19 fights by knockout in the first round. And this weekend, he fought a 27-year-old YouTube sensation named Jake Paul. And quite frankly, that fight had so much interest for a fight that really didn't have much to do with real boxing. They fought only eight rounds, 2-minute rounds, using 10 or 14 ounce gloves as opposed to the standard 10 ounce gloves. But everybody was excited to see this one. And when I looked around the crowd in the restaurants and I asked them, like, who are you rooting for? Who are you excited for in this one? It was nearly unanimous that everybody was rooting for Mike Tyson. Everybody, in spite of Jake Paul's youth, in spite of his notoriety from YouTube, even my younger staff members were rooting for Mike Tyson. That's the guy from The Hangover, they said. The guy with the tiger. And all of our older guests were rooting for him because of Father Time. Right, that ultimately we wanted to go back to that time in 1989 against Michael Spinks, in a simpler time in our lives when boxing meant something of the world, and take another look at that fight. And we were hoping for it, and it never quite appeared or happened. But what did happen was an amazing experience, allowing us to think back to those times when, in the same way that we might look at using vinyl records or the feeling a 1969 Mustang makes for us, right? Or perhaps wearing a mechanical watch as opposed to a digital iWatch or Apple Watch in some capacity. This Tyson fight drew everybody back. And how did Tyson become a hero? A man who spent 2 years in jail for rape. Right? Someone who spent 9 months in jail for beating up a passenger in a road rage incident. And yet everybody in the country, including the announcers, including all 72,000 people at Arlington Stadium, were rooting for him. He became a hero because we wanted to go back in time and experience those sort of feelings that we had for boxing in a simpler time. And we got to show that fight and experience all of that together. And it was really an amazing, amazing moment in our restaurants and restaurants across the country. I personally think that we need to look into why we all rooted for a man who was an anti-hero, a villain, and suddenly he became this hero for all of us. And it was because we all wanted to have that battle against Father Time. We could all relate to the idea that somehow at 58 years old, we could step into the ring and have a fight against such a brash and obnoxious individual and prove that somehow we could still run 5 miles a week, that somehow we could still put on that jersey and go out there and compete. And maybe we can't, right? Tyson proved that perhaps Father Time does, you know, hold his barnacles over all of us and slow us up a bit. But ultimately, we rooted for that individual so that we could go back in time and experience what it felt like to be young again and remember those particular times. And I think that when we think of our local restaurant business, we also have thoughts in this manner. We want to have the old school restaurants that you remember, not just the Vivace's that we talk about a lot on this show, but the Art Owens and Bob Slavin and Bob McMahon restaurants, the Jonathan Landines of the world, the Susanna Davila's of the world, and Cafe Pocacosa. And we want those to be there for us still. But the world is changing and growing up. And quite frankly, the face of the restaurant industry is changing as well, too. We're not going to be able to have fine dining white tablecloth anymore. In the same way that we're not able to have Tyson fights in that manner like we used to in the 80s when time stood still, when you watched him fight, you know, so many famous fighters and we all just paused with bated breath wondering if there was going to be a knockout in the first round. We're not going to be able to go back to those kind of restaurants. We've got a new face of the industry out there, right? Fast casual, non-full service restaurants, ways that somehow have clipped out large portions of the human experience. And you don't see fine dining restaurants opening anymore at all in not just Southern Arizona, but in the country, quite frankly. You see a lot of fast casual. You see a lot of QSR, a lot of even upscale sports bar type concepts, maybe in something that we do, even over at Union Public House. And I don't think we're going to be able to go back to that world that we had before. In the same way, we can't go back to Tyson in 1986 and Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and 8-bit Nintendo. We're also not necessarily going to be able to bring back the Tack Room, whether we like it or not. Today, I've got a great guest coming up after the break. Sergio Pignon's going to be here. We're going to talk about Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar, a new upscale sports bar concept that's been opened here in Tucson on the north side of town, Oracle and Orange Grove. Looking forward to that next Jake Paul fight as well. Maybe he can take a stab at Clint Eastwood or you know, somebody else of age appropriateness over there. I'm looking at you, Jimmy Carter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Sergio Pignon coming up after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live in the KVOI studios this morning by Sergio Pignon, owner and general manager of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Sergio, good morning.
Good morning, Grant. Thank you so much for having me here in this segment today.
Hey, thanks for coming in. I had a great dinner just the other night. My wife and I got an opportunity to go down to Redbird. I'd heard great things from friends and family members about this, and it did not disappoint. We had an absolutely fantastic meal, and I thought it'd be wonderful to have you on this show and talk about some of the trials and tribulations of the restaurant business. How did you get your start in the industry?
Well, that was quite a time ago. While in high school, I started working at a fast food restaurant as a cashier, and then eventually worked at a full service restaurant as a busboy. Got a job as a cook, where my love for the kitchen started. However, I hated the smell of a fryer. You know, when you're working those long shifts and you're smelling like a fryer. So eventually, you know, once I got out of high school, I got a second job as a server. So kind of worked my way through the whole positions. You know, kind of get a feel of the whole restaurant. Not knowing what I wanted to do in life, you know, I just kept working, you know, two jobs, in the morning cooking, the night serving, and then eventually when I turned 20, I guess I was at the right place at the right time. I got my first kitchen manager position. Through there, you know, working as a kitchen manager, I did that for about 2-3 years, and then I wanted to really test my culinary skills and apply for an executive chef position here in Tucson at a high-end steakhouse. And at 23, I was executive chef for a steakhouse.
Can you say which steakhouse that was?
It was Apple Encantara, Firebirds. I don't know if you heard of it.
Yeah.
So I was there for quite a while. You know, it was a little intimidating because I was the younger chef in the whole company at the time, and obviously everybody that worked around you was in their late 30s. So you really had to prove yourself. You know, you gotta work harder than anybody just to kind of show them why you were a chef. During the time there, you know, I got many awards from cleanest kitchen of the company, best performance and retention. In 2016, I got chef of the year, and that got me promoted to general manager. Then I did that for a few years. Within the year, I got promotion to managing partner, which, you know, you need to get some criterias for here and there in any company given. And then while working at that company, I worked side by side with my partner, Rory Martin, which, you know, we kind of worked for a few years, almost 10 years, actually. And the idea of Redbird became in place, you know. We were doing really good for them. We wanted to see what we could do for us. And the idea of Redbird just became of trying to open up our own restaurant and see where that get us to.
So where'd you get the name Redbird from particularly? I know Redbird is also a brand of chicken breast, like from on a commercial level over there. And so is there any relation between that, or was this just some other concept that you and Rory came up with?
Honestly, we're just Cardinal fans, you know. It was a big thing at the time. We wanted to do like a sports bar at the beginning. So obviously, we kind of scratched that. We wanted to do a little bit more upscale setting. So, however, Redbird just kind of stuck to us. We wanted to do everything from scratch, pairing it out with a craft cocktail list and just, you know, kind of do it a little bit more elevated. Still having TV, so if you wanted to watch a game or, you know, after work, you just wanted to enjoy a beer and watch a game without that noise level of, you know, the game on your face, we still kept some TVs at the bar. So, you're able to do that. But
can we still catch a Cardinals game over there then live on the NFL ticket?
Absolutely. We got all the games playing. So anytime you want to watch a game, you know, that's the to-go spot.
I love the devotion over there to the Cardinals. I happen to be from Detroit, a Detroit Lions fan, but I don't think I could open a Lions-specific bar. It would have caused too much drinking. We would have been crying in our tears for most of the last, you know, five decades or so. But hey, any team can have a bad century, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that, you know, we, at the time also, you know, my wife's grandma passed away, unfortunately, and she had Cardinals all over her house. So it just kind of felt right to name it Redbird. And it's funny because eventually we kind of realized the whole branding of the chicken. And even nowadays, people ask us, are you related to the Redbird chicken breast?
Of course, just because it has a connotation with food and association, although it's probably an insider thing where us on the chef side of things recognize the brand, but I'm not so sure the general public is tied to the Redbird chicken breast specifically in any capacity.
Correct. But it had a good ring to it, you know. Redbird Scratch Kitchen Plus Bar was born after that. Just to kind of pair up, you know, scratch made bar classics with a craft cocktail list.
No, that sounds fantastic. So we're talking again to Sergio Pignon, owner and general manager of Redbird Kitchen and Bar. Where is Redbird located?
We are located at 64444 North Oracle Road, so right on Oracle and Orange Grove. We're right behind the Oregano's that's on the corner. A lot of people know, I'm sure they remember Swenson's, Sullivan's back in the day. We took over that spot. There's a lot of history behind it. A lot of people that used to go there. And, you know, if you remember the little train going around the restaurant, great ice cream, we kind of took that space and renovated it. You know, it doesn't look like what it was back in the day. Put a lot of work, put a lot of thought behind it. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of history in that location.
Without a doubt, that's been a restaurant for multiple years, but it was certainly due for a renovation after so many decades of use in a restaurant, right? These old spaces don't exactly age like a fine Bordeaux. And like we were saying, white tablecloth, fine dining's kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. Trains going around the dining room as well, too. While a novel concept are probably not going to be a growth leader in the sector in any capacity.
Correct. And, you know, I think with everything that's happening with the economy and whatnot, you know, we're trying to still give people value. You know, you're not going to find the tablecloths. However, we still have a couple of little touches here and there to kind of enhance the experience, you know, to make sure that we give value. I believe that, you know, nowadays we're not necessarily in the food and beverage industry. We're in the hospitality industry, right? How we make people feel. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's a trade, right? You give me your money, I got to give you my product, you know, but I feel that everybody expects food and drinks to be at a certain level nowadays, you know? So how do we make that better, you know? And I think it's through the process of how we make you feel through that trade, you know? From smiles at the front door to great food, great drinks, a lot of little details that we go through the service, you know, we try to provide, even though, you know, all that high-end dining experience is going away, you know, we're trying to provide something similar without, you know, breaking the buck.
So you opened up, this is your first new restaurant, right? Your first full service restaurant that you've owned up front. And it opened up a little over a year ago. Where is it? When's your year anniversary coming up over here?
So December 11th, and I can't believe it. You know, time just flew by. It's definitely crazy. We are definitely planning on celebrating. You know, we some of the thoughts that we have right now is potentially we're going to be doing a glass of sparkling wine for people to come out and celebrate with us. There's going to be a lot of details to come of what we're going to be doing. So keep in touch. Definitely, if you haven't, check out our website, redbirdrestaurants.com. We're also big on Instagram, redbird_scratchkitchen, and Facebook, redbirdscratchkitchen+bar. People can actually sign up to our new email newsletter on our website. And even today, we actually send out kind of like a fall newsletter with everything that we got going on. We're actually going to be closing up for Thanksgiving so our employees are able to spend the day with their families. But any specials, any new events, we share it through there.
I think most traditional restaurants close up on Thanksgiving. We've tried over the years in Union Hospitality Group to open up on Thanksgiving. We've made turkeys and stuffing and mashed potatoes and cranberries and all the things. But not only are the sales tepid at best, you also get quite a negative blowback from the staff about opening and working those holidays as well too. And so I've always, you know, gone to the old adage, if you can't beat them, join them. And we as well are closing our restaurants on Thanksgiving Day as well too. As we were talking about off microphone over here, coming up is Blackout Wednesday, which is pretty much the busiest bar day of the entire year. Happens to be the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, right? That Wednesday night, 1 week from today, is massive, massive crowds because everybody comes back into town to visit their family. And with the day off on Tuesday, you know you're going to have to watch the Lions lose, and you know you're going to have, you know, a dinner later that afternoon with Grandma and Uncle Pat. But what are you going to do on Wednesday night? You're going to go out with the boys, right? You're going to go out and check out a bar. So that is a busy happening restaurant night, one of the busiest nights of the entire year. Often eclipses even Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve for us, and it's probably going to be a big one for you as well, too.
Oh, absolutely. We definitely have it on our radar. Obviously, we weren't all open last year, you know, to experience it. So we're definitely going to be prepared for that. I do believe that, you know, people like to have a good time with their friends right before, you know, they got to deal with grandma and grandpa and the rest of the family, you know? So I think it's going to be a blast for everybody here in town.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really big day for you guys as well, too. And as you celebrate your year anniversary, you know, take note that you've already done the impossible, right? Surviving the first year in a restaurant business that has such a high rate of failure in those first couple of years, that even getting to that year two or three help you out because you have the opportunity to look at previous year's sales data and start to decipher, hey, am I going to be busy on this day or not? And that allows you to prognosticate, hopefully with a little more accuracy, and staff better, either more or less, allowing you to have a smoother, better running hospitality industry. And so many people don't even make it that far, Sergio. So a big congratulations to you for even getting by this first year and what's really been kind of a tough year too in the full service restaurant sector. We've seen, you know, massive bankruptcies this year. Red Lobster went bankrupt. TGI Fridays just went bankrupt. Like, these are big family dining chains with major buying power, and they're now gone. So you guys have done an awesome job over there at Redbird.
Thank you so much. Yeah, definitely the community has accepted our food. We actually have regulars now that come in quite a time. So I think part of the key is that we are offering different things that are very approachable, like tacos, loaded wings, mash burgers. Like, we have a little bit of everything for everybody. So I think that's one of the keys, making it from scratch, and whatever we don't make in-house, we get it locally sourced. So you know, pair that out with a great cocktail, you're solid, you know. So I think the community has been really, really liked our food so far, and the reviews are great as well.
No, the proof is in the pudding. If you get a chance to check out the reviews on Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar on either Google or the evil Yelp, you know, we're not the biggest fan of Yelp over here on Jump in Tucson, but nonetheless, you can take a look, and the proof's in the pudding that there are a lot of positive reviews for you, your concept over there. And for that, I salute you, because it is not an easy thing to do, as you know. When we come back after the break, we're going to break down some more of those trials and tribulations about what it takes to do a restaurant over here, in Tucson. Sergio, as it turns out, is from Mexico City as well, too. I had a restaurant in Mexico, too. We might break down some of those differences coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Sergio Pinon from Redbird Kitchen and Bar on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We've got another segment with Sergio Pinon, owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Welcome back, Sergio.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Hey, we were talking all things restaurant business over here. Redbird is going to celebrate its one-year anniversary on December 11th. And that's a big feat getting through that first year in the restaurant business, huh?
Oh, yeah. I still can't believe it. We're going to be there a year already. But definitely a time to celebrate. You know, we definitely have worked really hard, putting a lot of time, a lot of work into developing our staff, you know, making sure the food is awesome every time. So we definitely want to celebrate. We encourage people to come out and check us out if you haven't.
So Sergio, you were obviously starting from the absolute bottom of the restaurant business in the same way that I did too. And I find so many successful operators come from the bottom in some capacity, because you have to have an understanding of what it's like to scrub cheese off of plates, or to wait tables, or to bartend, or to hostess, or to, you know, ingress a giant Cisco order, to really know what it's like to work in the business. What do you think the toughest thing has been for you as an owner, moving from manager to owner? Like, what's been the toughest thing you think for Redbird?
I would say, you know, when you work for somebody, you know, when you're using somebody else's money, you don't, you know, even though you try to manage it and you try to avoid any type of costs and you know, wastes, it doesn't hurt us as much when it's actually your money, you know. And I think that's the biggest wake up call, you know. If you, once you hear somebody drop a plate, you know, that's literally coming out of your pocket, or, you know, so we messed up a recipe, we have to throw out, you know, 10 gallons of cheese sauce, you know, that's pretty sad, you know. But other than that, honestly, you know, it feels good, you know, that your vision, what you've been working on for the past 12 years, it's coming to reality, you know. And it's cool to see your staff bringing that vision to life, you know. Some of the challenges that we had at the beginning was, you know, You're basically trying to teach people to do a concept that you've never done before. Even though, you know, I work in the restaurant industry for a long time and, you know, I've done every single position, we never done Redbird, right? So you're trying to teach somebody how to do Redbird without you fully 100% knowing what you're doing, you know? So that was tough at the beginning. I would say the first 3 months, you know, you're there open to close, no days off, you know, working a lot. You know, even one of my eyes got all red, almost popped out of stress and whatnot. It was fun.
Oh yeah, it's a physical beating over here. I broke a vocal cord, Sergio. Actually, I only have one working vocal cord right now because I talk so much. I know you may be shocked, radio listeners over here, but I talk so much, and over the sound of clanging plates and DJs and bands and the cheer of sports, you know, fans everywhere, that I project my voice so much, I've damaged a vocal cord so badly working in the restaurant business that I've only got one working one left. And so I can relate to, you know, you having some physical maladies, because the challenge is that difficult, huh?
And honestly, it is. You know, it's funny to hear sometimes people that say, oh, you know, I want to open up a restaurant, you know, and they're like, yeah, you know, once I open up the restaurant, I'm not going to work and I'm going to make all this money. But in reality, you know, it's a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of thought process when it comes, even, you know, from, you know, what's the fork going to look like on the table, or what kind of plate are we putting here, or where the lighting is going to go. You know, there's so much work that has to be done behind, you know, opening up a restaurant, that people sometimes, you know, you don't really acknowledge it. You know, you don't really acknowledge the whole thought behind everything. You know, every single little piece has to work in order for us to provide that experience.
Without a doubt, there's so many details. And every one of these decisions really isn't black or white, right? There's no 100% right answer in how you're going to make that cheese sauce, or what type of napkin you're going to use, or what type of fork you're going to use, or what color you're going to paint the dining room. It all just has to end up working together cohesively. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't as well, too.
And trial and error, right? I think the biggest thing that we've been able to do is just getting the feedback from our staff, obviously, as well. That's the first defense of feedback. You know, like, whenever we're trying to change something or just do something, we should go with their staff first, right? Hey, what do you guys think about this? Obviously, you know, they're going to give you their most, you know, the honest feedback from it, and then you go to our guests. You know, if there's guests that are complaining, you know, the cheese is too spicy or this salsa is not spicy at all, you know, then we start tweaking and just based on feedback, you know, trying to accommodate everybody. Obviously, you're going to have those people that, you know, you just can't, you know, make happy. And unfortunately, it is what it is. But for the most part, you know, we listen, you know, we want to take that feedback to heart and adjust to make sure that we accommodate everybody.
Without a doubt, no easy feat indeed. As the whole business is difficult, of course, over here, let's talk about that site selection again. Oracle and Orange Grove, right? Oracle can be a difficult place to have restaurants. You've got a high speed of traffic, right? There's a big traffic count, but those cars are cooking. They're going by pretty fast. And many of the locations, including where you're at Redbird, are kind of set back over there in the shopping center. What are the challenges you've had thus far over at that shopping center?
I think definitely visibility, you know, that's why we kind of made two big signs from on both corners. That way people are able to see where we're at. Obviously, we got Oregano's right in front of us. So, you know, that's it's been there for a long time. Really, people love Oregano's as well. So it's great to be close to a restaurant that, you know, it's popular and people love. A couple other challenges will be, you know, I feel that still people don't know that we're there, you know, and I think it's because the same point, the plus is a little hitting on the back. So, you know, we've been trying to work a lot with, you know, bringing food content creators, word of mouth works a lot as well. You know, even you invited me to this segment today, you know, definitely we'll bring some awareness to some of our folks that haven't heard of Redbird before.
No, of course. Tucson is very receptive to locally owned restaurants. It's one of the things I love about this community over here is that we truly do favor those locally owned establishments. And in spite of all the cards being stacked against us in the deck, these rising labor costs and rising product costs, like over and over, Tucsonans will choose the local option over the chain as well too. And I think that we're seeing that in the case of Redbird thus far is that, you know, I'm hearing about it. Word of mouth has made it to me. It's made its way to other people in this radio station. And that's something you should be really proud of.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, again, we try to do everything as much as we can in-house. And I think that makes a difference, even using quality products, you know. And again, you know, as a restaurant people, you know, we always think about cost and labor and how can we get creative to kind of eat some of those costs. But at the end of the day, it's just providing a really good meal made with quality ingredients that kind of sets you apart.
Without a doubt. So do you get any problems from like the unsheltered homeless population that far north up Oracle? I know that, you know, the Oracle in Fort Lowell, Oracle in Prince, even Oracle in a river area right now have some really serious challenges for both retail and restaurants. Does it make its way, that problem, up to Oracle in Orange Grove?
It's rare, to be honest. I think Plaza del Oro, which is our landlord right now, they did a pretty good job of having a private security in the establishment around the area, and they keep the plaza clean, which, you know, that's another plus, you know, making sure that you have a clean environment as well. But it's super rarely that we see people.
That's great. And private security is probably part of the reason for that one as well, too. And it's unfortunate that so many businesses here in Pima County have to have private security on their properties to keep them clean and to keep them safe. It'll be interesting to see how this passage of Proposition 312, which is that property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws, plays its way into the retail and restaurant community over the next year or two as we think about all of those costs that have to be incurred to prevent crime from happening in our establishments as well.
I agree. And like you said, you know, I think the private security definitely helps, you know, to kind of maintain, you know. But obviously, you know, as a restaurant owner, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, people feel comfortable coming to your establishment without the thought of, you know, somebody is going to do anything or damages or anything in that sense.
Sure. And that's one of the reasons that people like yourself are choosing to build right now in unincorporated Pima County as opposed to in the city of Tucson, right? We've got so many empty locations and infill projects in the city that are not being developed right now that I would love to see get some life in activity because nobody wants a shopping center with 50% occupancy and empty spaces in it. But it gets tougher and tougher tougher to open up in the city with both, you know, what's going on the streets and when we look at what's happening in the taxes as well, too. In an unincorporated Pima County, right, Sergio, your sales tax is 6.1%.
That's correct.
And the city of Tucson's got another 2.6% on top of that. And coming up on March 11th, they're looking to add another 0.5% sales tax increase that would take the city of Tucson's sales tax all the way to 9.2%, basically making it 3.1% more expensive, or 50% more for those of you keeping track at home, that it would be that much more expensive to buy something in the city than it would be in a place like yours at Oracle in Orange Grove, or even some of mine in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. And that's unfortunate. And I think that really hurts the city development as well, too. Well, we've got one more segment coming up with Sergio. We're going to talk about some of his favorite local restaurants in Tucson when we come back after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sergio Pignon from Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar and Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m., Jump in Tucson brings you amazing local news, great stories of the University of Arizona from Dr. Ed Eckerly on Mondays and Fridays. We've got Ted Maxwell in the Engagement Hour on Tuesdays from 9 to 10. He's always got some amazing civic leaders and politicians to talk to. And then we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance every Thursday, bringing you all kinds of neat things to do in Southern Arizona and the people that are making it happen. Now, speaking of somebody that's making it happen, I've got one more segment over here with Sergio Pignon, owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Welcome back, Sergio.
Thanks, Grant.
Hey, we were talking about local restaurants and how Tucson supports local over all these chains, right? We're seeing Red Lobster go down in flames, and TGI Fridays has been closing locations everywhere, and yet you're opening up, and I'm opening up stores. Tell me a few of your favorite local restaurants in Tucson.
I mean, obviously, Redbird will be the number one on my list.
Right, fair enough. I that goes without saying.
I really like the, I think in my personal opinion, the PY Steakhouse. I'm sure you've probably been there. Probably the best steakhouse in town, in my opinion.
A lot of challenges in the local steakhouse arena, right? This is a field, people ask me, just the other day, I had a great regular customer say, Grant, there are no more great, great locally owned steakhouses. And I tried to argue back with her. I said, you know, like you've got Charo Steak does a great job downtown as well, too. But you do think about, you know, these other fine dining concepts no longer with us, the McMahons of the world. Why don't we have a Steak 44 or a Mastro's or some level of high-end steakhouse? And the answer, I believe, is that, quite frankly, it's so expensive. Like those cuts of animal proteins, whether it's prime meats or it's seafood, you know, Alaskan king crab legs or salmon or something like this, are just so expensive that unless you've got industry-wide contacts as deep as the chains do, it's actually very tough for the sole proprietorships to compete. So PY Steakhouse, you're saying, got any other favorite restaurants to promote over here on Jump in Tucson?
Dante's Fire is pretty good. I really liked it a lot. Honestly, I mean, Union. If I wanted to go to the best patio here in Tucson, I'll probably go to Union, and the Cuban sandwich is just delicious.
That's Thank you. We appreciate that promo as well, too, over there. So speaking of Cuban sandwich, you're from Mexico City originally, right?
Correct.
And when did you come to the United States?
I've been here for about 22 years.
Okay.
I was about 8 years old.
There are some amazing, amazing restaurants in Mexico City. Actually, some of the best in the world have come from there, right? Pujol and Quintonil and Azul Historico and like so many fantastic, well-executed, fine, fine dining restaurants in Mexico. And I think some of that comes, unfortunately, from the wage structures that they've got down there versus what we've got down here, right? You really have got career servers and career chefs in restaurants in Mexico, no?
Oh, yeah. And I think it also accounts for the diversity that's in the city. You know, you have people from all over the world that just live in, you know, this tiny city. And you know, realistically, you have all these different flavors. And, you know, one of my biggest things is the salsas in Mexico City. I think, you know, it's just phenomenal, you know, the cuisine and different palates that you can experience there. And that was a little bit of the the flavors that we also inherit in the Redbird Scratch Kitchen, some of the salsas that come from a little bit of the Mexico City cuisine.
Without a doubt, there tends to be a struggle for authentic central Mexican cuisine to actually make it here in Tucson in some capacity, because so many people are so accustomed to the Tex-Mex style or even just the Sonoran flavors that the real essence of a Guadalajara or Mexico City fine dining restaurant so rarely make it up here to Tucson, huh?
I believe so, and I think it's part of it is, you know, you have a very high influence of the Sonoran culture. You know, obviously we're a few hours from the border and whatnot, but I think the big influence of Sonoran flavors and whatnot really takes over the city, and I think that's what people are just used to, you know? I don't think people like to experience different flavors when it comes to different palates.
So as somebody that's opened up their first restaurant and you're just about to celebrate your anniversary again on December 11, do you have any advice out there for listeners that want to open up their own restaurant? I get a lot of people that come to me and say, Grant, I have this dream. I've got grandma's lasagna recipe. And every time I make it, they say it's so awesome. I want to open my own restaurant. What do you got to say to that, sir?
You have to be in love with it, realistically. You know, long hours, a lot of work, a lot of thought process, a lot of sacrifice. It sounds fun to say, hey, I want to open up a restaurant, until you're actually going through the process, you know. If you have a dream and you think you got what it takes, go for it, you know. I think money comes and goes at the end of the day, you know. One of my biggest things was I don't want to be 60 and regret, why didn't I do that, you know, and why didn't I make the jump, you know what I mean? So I'm still kind of young, you know, I still got some energy in me. So I was like, you know what? And I got a great partner as well, as I told you, Rory Martin. He was the you know, main person that came up with most of the menu. And, you know, surrounding yourself with great people as well that are going to help you achieve that vision, you know, it definitely helps you surrounding yourself with great individuals helps a lot.
Without a doubt, it takes a village to run a restaurant. It's far more than one individual and a bunch of passion, because you've got to execute, you know, a large number of jobs and do them very quickly. How many people do you employ over at Redbird right now?
Right now, I have about 65 people in that small space.
Right, amazing, right? Nobody gives credit to restaurants about just how many employees it takes to run something like this, right? Like, how many jobs opening up, even Redbird, right, which is a reasonably compact space, and there are 65 jobs created just from that one right there. Times that by a few local restaurants, and suddenly that impact on the community is outsized. And that's why you see me always out there advocating for local business and for local restaurants, because it all starts with job creation. If we want to make Tucson and Pima County a better place, it starts by having high-paying, awesome jobs for people out there. We got 2 minutes left in this segment. Serge, you got any upcoming projects you want to talk about here on the show?
Just want to let everybody know, Redbird Scratch Kitchen Plus Bar is located at 6444 North Oracle Road. Highly encouraged to make reservations. We're usually packed on the weekends. You can make a reservation through Yelp or through our website, or calling us at the restaurant, 520-495-5353. Great happy hour Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. You're going to find discounts on some of our amazing food and great cocktails. And coming up, you know, we're going to be having on or December 11th, or 1 year anniversary party. So definitely keep an eye out for some information on that. We have a really good cozy weather cocktail menu right now. So craft cocktails, we make all the syrups in-house, nothing out of a bottle, just, you know, real fruit, cooked down, make it into a syrup. And it's a great list. A lot of people love it right now. We have rotating beer selections, really good wine. So a full bar, a lot of whiskey as well. I think I have over 30 whiskeys in there. For those whiskey drinkers, definitely come by and check it out. But yeah, if you just want to have an awesome meal with a great cocktail, watch the sport after working, come by Redbird.
Thank you very much, Sergio. We appreciate you taking the time to join us here on Jump in Tucson. As we look to the past, to restaurants that once tickled our fancy, concepts that once were the highest of hot cuisine that you could possibly have here in Tucson, we need to be reminded, just like we were reminded last Friday, that we're never actually going to get to go back to the past. And instead, we should look to the future, into concepts, into operators like yourself, taking that that entrepreneurial risk, stepping out there in front of the general public to open up your own restaurant and realize your own dream. Thank you, Sergio. It's been an amazing pleasure to get to spend Wednesday morning with you.
Thank you, Grant. I appreciate everybody.
And thank you, listeners. Join us tomorrow. Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance on Jump in Tucson. It's been my pleasure to spend this morning with you. Thanks again for listening, and see you next Wednesday.